This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. The House Judiciary Committee has begun to examine evidence in the possible impeachment of one or more West Virginia Supreme Court justices. Members heard testimony Thursday from auditors on their improper use of state vehicles and rental cars, a justice's possession of a historic desk, and a fast spend down of a budget surplus. Senior reporter Dave Mistich joins us now to talk about day one of testimony in these proceedings. Dave, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
So first things first, Justice Menas Ketchum resigned from the bench and announced his retirement Wednesday. Tell us how that plays a role in what's happening now.
Well, at the opening of the meeting yesterday, House Judiciary Chairman John Schott acknowledged Ketchum stepping down from the bench. Schott stated that as a matter of saving time and effort on behalf of the committee, any evidence or testimony specifically and only pertaining to Ketchum would not be heard, would not be a part of these proceedings. Here's what Schott had to say about that before testimony kicked off.
As all of you on the committee know, the only remedy that's available to the House as a result of this proceeding is to recommend articles of impeachment, and the only remedy available to the Senate is removal from office. And because the retirement of Justice Ketchum effectively will result in his removal from office, we will not be spending any time dealing with the findings of any of the reports that deal with Justice Ketchum.
As you reported on our website, wvpublic.org, the opening proceedings were also marked by a partisan battle over the committee's newly established rules of procedure. What happened with that?
At various points throughout this meeting, actually, Democrats attempted to amend these rules of procedure that were established by Chairman John Schott. The minority party, the Democrats, of course, also argued that Schott's established rules for impeachment ran counter to the general rules of the body as a whole. I should say that House Resolution 201, which was passed by the full chamber last month, calls for the investigation of these possible impeachments of all five of the state's justices that preside over the high court here in West Virginia. The measure also authorized Schott to establish and define these rules of procedure. He actually ultimately ruled that the motions to amend these rules were out of order. Democrats also took issue with Justice Alan Laufrey's attorney meeting with committee counsel regarding these rules. I should say also that Chairman Schott stated he was not a part of those meetings.
In terms of testimony, though, committee members heard from the director of the post-audit division of the Legislative Auditor's Office. The person in that position is Justin Robinson, who gave testimony off and on throughout, what was it, nearly 9, maybe 10 hours of proceedings?
That's right. Well, delegates questioned Robinson about these audits that have come out over the course of the past, you know, 6, 7 months. They indicated that justices kept poor records while traveling, sometimes used state-owned and rental vehicles for personal reasons. Discussions of vehicle misuse focused almost heavily and very specifically on Justices Robin Davis and of course, Alan Laufrey. Travel by Davis, who was appointed to the bench in 1996, elected as a Democrat in 2000 as well as 2012, focused on a November 2011 trip to Wheeling and Parkersburg. Over the course of that trip, in between stops for official court business, Davis attended a political fundraiser in Parkersburg. Delegate Tom Fast, a Republican, asked Justin Robinson about this particular trip from Davis. And here's a bit of that interaction and how Robinson responded.
From Wheeling to Parkersburg, that's a couple of hours at least of driving on a state vehicle, correct?
Yes.
And but regardless, you're not aware of any policy that she would have violated in attending that fundraising event at the expense of a state vehicle?
No, and the reason we drew that conclusion was that it was coincidental. She could have planned the trip to go to Wheeling and then back to Charleston and then back up to Parkersburg, but she did it in a way that was more like a round trip rather than bouncing back and forth between Charleston. But to my knowledge, no, there is no policy she violated.
And again, a lot of the focus on these impeachment centers around Alan Laufrey. We've heard a lot about him in the past few months. He's a Republican elected in 2012, the last of partisan judges elected here in the state before state law was changed. Loffrey, of course, was indicted last month on federal charges. And during these audits and through testimony yesterday, we've learned that he often failed to properly provide destinations for trips in state vehicles. Other aspects of the audits show mileage on trips and rental cars far beyond the distance between airports and hotels where he was staying on business.
Later during Thursday's hearing, committee members asked legislative manager and auditor Aaron Allred about a state-owned antique desk used by Loffrey that has been appraised at $42,500. The desk is believed to have been selected for the Supreme Court offices by Cass Gilbert, the architect who designed the state capitol complex. Tell us why this came up in yesterday's meeting.
Well, a complaint from the Judicial Investigation Commission, who issued the statement of charges against Loffrey and led to a suspension without pay, says he had the desk moved from the Capitol to his home without the permission or knowledge of the other justices. Media reports came out. The desk was returned. But here's legislative manager and auditor Alan Allred speaking about that.
There is an underlying value to the desk, whether it was a, quote, Cass Gilbert desk or not, just from being a piece of 1930 furniture for an antique collector.
Justin Robinson also returned later to provide testimony on the Supreme Court's purchase of gift cards as incentives for participants in the state's drug court program. Committee members also asked about other ways Supreme Court officials quickly spent down a budget surplus that had been built up to about $29 million. Should note this past legislative session, the legislature took a look at, possibly taking oversight of the Supreme Court's budget. That'll be on the ballot in November as a constitutional amendment, and the voters will decide how that will play out, whether or not the Supreme Court remains control of its own budget or if it becomes handed off to the legislature.
So, Dave, with just a few moments left, these meetings and testimony on potential impeachment will resume today. What can we expect?
Well, we know that the Judicial Investigations Commission, the JIC, has been subpoenaed. We don't know exactly when they'll appear before the committee. Last I heard, they've been a bit slow in getting some of that information and evidence back to the committee. In the end, though, should articles of impeachment be drafted by the House Judiciary Committee, they'd be voted on by the full chamber. If and when they clear the House, any trials would take place in the Senate and any convictions that would constitute a removal of office. So we'll see if it all comes to that. We're basically, in a holding pattern and letting these proceedings play out.
That's senior reporter here at West Virginia Public Broadcasting, Dave Mistich. Thanks so much, Dave, for joining us this morning.
Thanks, Teresa.
You can follow along with continued coverage of these proceedings, including live streaming from the House chamber on our website, wvpublic.org. Federal prosecutors have charged 8 former coal company employees with falsifying dust monitoring samples in 2 Kentucky mines. Coal dust exposure increases the risk of black lung disease, and the Ohio Valley is in the midst of a black lung epidemic. As Becca Schimmel reports, mine safety experts say the indictments raise questions about what executives at the company knew about illegal activity in their mines.
Western Kentucky District U.S. Attorney Russell Coleman didn't hide his emotion when announcing the dust fraud indictments.
This is one of those that just made me angry. It just made me angry to see the impact on these miners. It just made me angry to see the nature of the conduct.
Coleman's indictments allege Armstrong Coal, which is now bankrupt, saved money by avoiding proper ventilation controls in the 2 mines. But that increased the exposure for miners breathing the coal dust. The 8 people charged with tampering with coal dust samples include supervisors and safety officials, not executive-level officials at Armstrong Energy. But Coleman pointedly did not rule out the chance for further indictments.
We always continue to review documents, continue to interview witnesses, and a superseding indictment in any matter is always a possibility. So the investigation doesn't stop up until the point of trial.
Celeste Monfortin is a former federal mine safety official and occupational health researcher at George Washington University and Texas State University. She says mining companies have a choice between controlling the dust levels or lying about the levels, and that fraud is likely part of the reason for the epidemic of black lung cases.
It would, just be folly to think that cheating is not one of the factors that has contributed to this resurgence of black lung.
Monfortin says her experience in mine safety tells her that cheating on dust samples is often sanctioned and condoned by the executives of the mining company. She noted that there were no executives named in the most recent indictment.
What I am much more eager and interested in seeing are the indictments of those top executives that are making the decisions.
Tony Obegard is a Lexington attorney who previously worked with Kentucky and federal mine safety agencies. He's represented the Armstrong coal miners who told federal inspectors about the illegal activity at the mines. Obegard says he questions whether those who were charged made the decision to expose themselves to criminal liability on their own or if they were instructed to do that.
I mean, I don't think many people want to go to jail for something that they were told to do by somebody else.
The eight who were indicted face up to 5 years in jail. Obegard says some may want to cooperate with prosecutors.
And if that is the case here, and I don't know that it was, but if it is, then I would expect that they're going to be willing to talk to prosecutors. That is something that others who were not indicted might have to worry about.
Armstrong's former executives have not been charged with any wrongdoing. Company founder J. Horde Armstrong III is a former vice president with Arch Coal and a frequent campaign donor. Federal election records show Kentucky Republicans have been among the top recipients of his contributions.
I want to see all Armstrong bosses, the mine foreman, the superintendent, and everybody in the safety department go to jail because they all knew it was going on.
That's Mike Wilson, a former miner at Armstrong Mines, who was among those who alerted inspectors. He's worked at many different mines and said he's seen cheating on dust levels at every place. Wilson says he's glad to see the indictments come down, but he hopes it doesn't stop there. Wilson is currently suffering from black lung. For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Becca Schimmel in Bowling Green, Kentucky.
Federal lawmakers will be in the Ohio Valley today to tackle the issue of underfunded pension plans during a congressional field hearing. An estimated 15,000 union members from across the country descended on Ohio's Capitol yesterday to rally those politicians to protect their retirement. Aaron Payne reports.
What do we want our country to do about our pensions? Fix it!
The rally saw unions for miners, Teamsters, steelworkers, and other professions from around the country gathered outside the Ohio State House. The thousands in attendance want incoming federal legislators to look into Ohio Senator Sherrod Brown's Butch Lewis Act of 2017 as a fix for struggling pension plans. David Durkee, international president of the Bakery, Confectionery, Tobacco Workers, and Grain Millers Union, says the proposed legislation would protect retirees.
It is not a handout. It is a responsible, appropriate, fair approach to a very difficult problem. And that is why it has the support of unions and employers.
The bill would offer 30-year low-interest loans from the Treasury Department for struggling pension plans. Friday's Joint Select Committee on Pensions field hearing is scheduled for 2 p.m. at the Ohio State House. For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Aaron Payne in Columbus, Ohio.
Lovingly referred to as the first family of the banjo, partners in love, life, and music, Bela Fleck and Abigail Washburn, join us for this Mountain Stage Song of the Week, Don't Let It Bring You Down.
Don't let it bring you down, down, bring you down. Don't let it bring you down, down, bring you down. Don't let it bring you down, down, bring you down. Don't let it bring you down. Track. One foot forward and one foot back. Don't let them bring you down. Sunlit shadows and moonlit days throwing you off the narrow way. Sunlit shadows and moonlit days. Don't let them bring you down, down. Bring it down. Don't let it bring you down, down. Bring it down. Don't let it bring you down, down. Bring it down. Don't let it bring you down. Fortune gained, don't let him bring you down. All of you souls who hear my plea, pray for the seekers who should see. All of you souls who hear my plea, don't let him bring you down, down. Bring it down, don't let him bring you down, down. Bring it down, don't let him bring you down, down. Bring it down, don't let him bring you down.
That was Bela Fleck and Abigail Washburn performing Don't Let It Bring You Down. To hear this performance and more, tune in Friday and Saturday nights at 8 right here on West Virginia Public Broadcasting. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. West Virginia Morning is produced with help from Molly Bourne, Jessica Lilly, Kara Lofton, Liz McCormick, Dave Mistich, Brittany Patterson, and Roxy Todd. Our news director is Jesse Wright. Our producer is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.